To hone in on the impact of President Trump's second mandate on transatlantic relations, I'm joined on the line by Mairead McGuinness, former European Commissioner for Financial Stability, Financial Services and the Capital Markets Union. Mairead, thank you very much for taking my call today.
Thank you.
Now, on the world stage, the bombshell for Europe really detonated when Vice President J.D. Vance berated European leaders at the Munich Security Conference in February for, unironically, the European Union wavering on democratic values. Now, did that really come as a shock to you?
Certainly the language was something that you wouldn't expect at any conference, let alone the Munich Security Conference. So I think both the language, the force of its delivery and the location at which it was delivered was quite a, I think those in the room certainly felt the chill, and those listening to it elsewhere felt this is a change in the dial. This is somebody coming to our house and telling us they don't like how we run our house at all, any level of it, and giving us advice. Was it a surprise? Maybe not, because, you know, there is a second presidency for Donald Trump, and he has a very, I suppose, team around him that have very strong views on many things beyond the US. But it isn't normal, and it's not what you would expect between friends and allies, who always have tough things to say to one another, but tend to do it in a more diplomatic way and don't always air these things in public. But we are in a very different place, and we've heard it. It has resonated. It has gone right into the DNA of the European Union, not just that speech, but many other comments about Europe. And it is, in a way, requiring the European Union to think and act differently. But there were signs of this before the Munich Security Conference.
Mm-hmm. Indeed, the tone has changed from the Biden administration, but that itself wasn't without its faults. But also, one could say, often looked upon as overly bureaucratic and bogged down in red tape, the EU's, well, the coordinated response to the COVID-19 pandemic and the swift rallying to the aid of Ukraine has proven that the bloc can manoeuvre rapidly when needed. Now, with US prevarication on security and the economic alliance between both blocs across the Atlantic, has the EU response, in your opinion, both strategically and diplomatically, the EU response to President Trump's tariffs, has it been adequately robust to date?
In my view, yes. It's a very measured, calm response, and it's how the European Union tends to do its business. You're right in pointing out that some of Europe's greatest moments have been at times of its greatest crisis. So as you said, before COVID, there was a, you know, disorder, and then suddenly there was a realization that Europe actually can succeed if we work together. And President von der Leyen pulled all of the initiatives around COVID, where member states worked together, not against each other. When Ukraine illegally was invaded by Russia and there was an energy crisis for Europe, there was a lot of chaos and then a realization that we have to diversify, be more efficient in energy use and invest in renewables. And all of those things were delivered by Europe working together. I mean, in this case, what is very clear from the European Union is that a realization there's a different relationship, a different way of negotiating, so penalise first and then come to the table, not the normal process. But that it is what it is. And, you know, the president of the commission is leading on this. She has a very strong trade commissioner, Mara Shefcovic, who's, you know, a measured man. He's been involved in European politics for a long time. And he will not, if you like, rise or fall on this. He will do his job diligently and look to find a solution. Where it might be problematic, I think, for us is trying to understand exactly what the US side want. Is it simply about trade and tariffs? Is it about more than that? I mean, yes, security and defence, Europe has to do more. But there's also talk about our regulatory system, not just around food, which has been mentioned, but clearly around finance. And, you know, this is something that Europe needs to be very mindful of, because while we are regarded, and even internally, as sometimes been overly bureaucratic, I mean, our work on our food system, our food safety controls is world class, and others follow us and want to be like us. So I think we have to be mindful of understanding exactly what the agenda is, rather than just seeing what's written on the page, because I think there is more to it in terms of what the US has in mind.
Yes, indeed. Anecdotally, I've heard that Trump really doesn't like Europe because of the regulations he's been subject to over his golf courses. So there's a personal tweak there. But we're going to move on to the economy a little later in our conversation. But bringing the subject back to, you mentioned there, the EU Commission President Ursula von der Leyen. Now, on a more, well, one could say radical shift from the, you know, the economic project that is the European Union, von der Leyen announced an 800 billion euro investment surge in European defence for the bloc to stand on its own. Security and defence has come to the top, or one of the top dossiers on Europe's agenda. And many are calling this shift French President Emmanuel Macron's told you so moment. I mean, since 2017, Macron has been repeatedly advocating for concerted investment and cooperation in European defence and overall streamlining procurement. Now, this move, I'm sure, is welcomed by most Eastern European and Baltic member states. But will consensus be found across the board for the militarization of the bloc?
Well, I think that rather than use the term militarization of the bloc, I think the European Union has been told directly by the United States that it will not cover us from a security and defense perspective. So we either do nothing and are vulnerable, or we do something to strengthen our own resilience. In other words, you need defence and security policies and the tools in order to hold peace and preserve and protect peace. Look at the Irish waters, for example, where there are cables which, you know, if they were successfully targeted, and indeed one would worry about that happening, would cause huge damage to communication, which would cause huge damage to the financial system, to everything that connects us. I mean, that's a very big security threat, even if it's not about weapons and fighting, but it would damage the European Union. I think the point that President Macron has been making is one that, you know, those who are involved in this area would say that Europe spends an awful lot separately. Each country spends a lot, but very inefficiently. I know nothing about arms and ammunition, and I am unlikely to learn, but I listen to those who do. And we have no interoperability between our systems. We buy separately. So the amount we spend, we don't get value for money. So there is, in some senses, a logic to saying, let's try and do this together. To your point about consensus, I think there's a realization, even in a member state like Ireland, which is neutral and will maintain and retain the policy of neutrality, but our government has already said we will spend more on our own security and defence, including on those very important cables I mentioned. So this is a wake-up moment for Europe that others have been at this place many years ago, but I think most member states are realising this is actually a responsibility of the European Union now to act. And it is an enormous amount of money, and, you know, there are lots of consequences and concerns around that. But I do think that we know the truth is that we will have to look after ourselves more in the future than we've had to do in the past. We've heard the messages loud and clear. And I think there is a time now for Europe to act proportionately and also to talk to our citizens, because Europe has enjoyed peace because we have a European Union. The invasion of Ukraine by Russia, I think, really was a shocking moment, especially for those countries close to Ukraine, close to Russia, who've lived through horrors of the past. Sometimes those of us far away read about it, but maybe we don't feel it in our gut. As my colleagues, you know, my Latvian colleagues, other colleagues, Polish colleagues, I mean, they have lived through the horrors of Russia and what it has done in the past. And they are the people we need to listen to because they have the experience. So I do think that the conversation with citizens needs to happen in all member states, and that there is a common understanding that the European Union does face a challenge around its own security and defence, needs to address it, but addressing it because we want to protect our peace. And that's what Europe is about. It's about a peace project, even if the Trump administration has suggested otherwise. I mean, its whole raison d'etre is because of war that, you know, countries came together. And I think we need to recall that in order to move forward in these very challenging times.
Mairead, just to finish up our conversation today, I will hone in there. You didn't. You chose your words carefully not to use the word attack, but there are threats definitely at the root of the transatlantic relationship of the last 80 years that has been forged between Europe and the US from the Marshall Plan up until, well, up until 100 days ago, one could say. But do you believe that the damage to the EU-US trade relationship is going to last? The pro-democracy, I'm making a paraphrase here, the pro-democracy icon, Nobel laureate and former president of Poland, Lech Wałęsa, quipped recently on the subject, saying that you can't turn fish soup back into an aquarium. So can it be fully repaired in the years ahead, that EU-US relationship?
Well, look, it has changed considerably. I mean, even during the Biden administration, there were tough discussions around Europe's need to invest in its own security. So it's not as if those topics weren't on the agenda. But we both have discussed the tone, the content, the harshness has changed the relationship. And maybe the European Union is less naive today than it was even a year ago and is grappling with its own internal challenges. And it needs to do that. And frankly, even if there wasn't this outside pressure, Europe needs to do this anyway, because we've come to a stage in our development where the status quo will not keep us moving forward. And that some of the big issues that you and I have been discussing do need to be looked at. And I think for that to happen, we need strong leadership. We need presidents and prime ministers of countries in Europe that have more time to give to the European level policy making and decision making. That's challenging when they've troubles back home, but that needs to happen. The Commission is doing its job. But I think more importantly, and I've been going around, you know, since I've come back from my 20 years in working in the Parliament and as Commissioner, I'm just out and about meeting groups here in my own country, here in Ireland. And what's fascinating is, you know, people don't want to discuss just the national issues. It's the big stuff. They want to know about trade. They want to know about what's happening in the universities, you know, what's happening to cuts in aid. So that there's on the ground level, these topics are now being discussed over coffees where they mightn't have been in the past. That's really healthy, because we need that people understand, that citizens understand that change will have to come at the European level. It can be led from leaders, but it needs the support of citizens. And that's why I think all of the discussions need to be aligned with conversations in households, in businesses, in social clubs, in town halls, about what sort of European Union do we want? Do we want us to stay as we are and be weakened by outside dynamics? Or are we proud of what Europe has achieved, despite all its flaws, and I know them myself only too well, and all of the challenges, but is Europe worth defending? Does it mean anything to us as citizens, this European Union, which has a European way of life that many, 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 many people around the world would only love to have, will never even have a dream that they can achieve it? And I think when we look at what we have that's good and that's worth promoting and enhancing, then I think we'll have that bottom-up leadership which will help our leaders to do the right thing. But, you know, it's going to be difficult. And I think that's why people need to, you know, have a strong backbone and face into this. We're peaceful people in Europe because we've experienced the horrors of war. We're supporting our Ukrainian neighbours because they are experiencing even still as we speak, the horrors of war. And it's very close and therefore very real that things can change. And the idea that progress is inevitable and that peace is just a given, none of those things are a certainty. And therefore, you know, it's time now for, you know, sharp intake of breath and do what we need to do.
Indeed. Mairead McGuinness, former European Commissioner for Financial Stability, thank you very much for talking to me today.
Thank you.